Good evening. Welcome back. The Jordan Rich Show continues for this hour till midnight tonight. And we're going to have some fun with a great, great couple of guests. Let me just once again remind you that we have a big weekend next weekend, Friday all day, the 10th, from about 9 a.m. to about 7. We'll be at the South Shore Plaza. Come by, say hello. And we'll have a big, big spread there from WBZ, all to benefit Children's Hospital, an on-air auction, which will be great fun. And you'll have a chance to donate and bid and rack up some dollars for a great cause, the kids. Then Sunday next week, 8 to midnight, special event. Every year we do it. It's the Jordan Rich Radiothon for Children's Hospital. And if you'd like a copy of the book For the Children, volume number 5 already, I'm selling it throughout the holidays and beyond. Just send a check for $20 or anything you can afford, made payable to Children's Hospital Boston. Send it along to WBZ, 1170 Soldiers Field Road, and it's 02134. Hi there, Jordan Rich with an old friend, Dave Waldrip. Dave and I go back how many years? 25 years at least?
Close to it, Jordan.
Dave, I'm surprised you're on dry land. You never. How do we get you on dry land tonight?
Well, once in a while we got to take a little break from the water there.
We're going to talk about the Flying Santa program, which is so neat, as well as some of the work you've done over the years as a Coast Guardsman and in the harbor. You're always out there on the boats. How long have you been doing work on the harbor?
Well, I went in the Coast Guard a week after high school back in 1978 for a four-year stint, and I'm still there today, and it's been very enjoyable. I've met some great people and got involved with the aids to navigation work. Oh, probably 15 years ago, and got involved with lighthouses, and that's how I ended up meeting Jeremy and Brian Tagg and the other folks who were involved with the Flying Santa program.
Hey, well, you mentioned Jeremy. Let's bring him on right now. Jeremy Dontremont is the webmaster of New England Lighthouses, a virtual guide at www.lighthouse.cc. And he's a man who knows a lot about lighthouses and also a lot about the Flying Santa program. Good evening, Jeremy.
Hi, Jordan.
Thank you so much for joining me. And, of course, you know Dave quite well. And
yes.
Let me start with Dave, and then we'll go right to you, Jeremy. You told me that just yesterday you completed the first flight?
Yes. The Flying Santa program, Jeremy will go more into the history, but I'll go a little more about the recency, what's been going on. This year marks the 75th anniversary of the program, which started in 1929 by Captain Bill Winkapaw. Well, this year being the 75th, we were very fortunate yesterday to have Bill Winkapaw III, Captain Bill Winkapaw's grandson, with us, who flew part of the flight yesterday with us in Maine. Yesterday we made 11 stops, starting at Portsmouth Harbor Light, flew all the way up to Jonesport, Maine, stopped along places like Vinyl Haven, Pemaquid Point, Fort Point, Bass Harbor, and delivered gifts to over 200, well, approximately 200 children yesterday by
wow.
helicopter.
That is great.
And I got the honor of filling the role as Santa, the man in the jolly red suit.
Well, I can see where you've been working at that, Dave.
I have been, Jordan. As you know, I've put a few on over the years.
But it's a perfect time to be Santa Claus and to do that. Well, Jeremy, of course, has been the historian, and you've written books about this whole Flying Santa program. And I guess the name Edward Rowe Snow is the name that comes to mind, right, Jeremy?
Absolutely. I think for a lot of people, they associate Edward Rowe Snow with the Flying Santa more than anybody else.
May I mention, by the way, the book that I have in my hand is The Lighthouses of New England, and it's, I guess, by Edward Rowe Snow, but you updated it, correct?
That is correct, yeah. That came out a couple of years ago.
Tell me about Mr. Snow and what was his involvement in all of this and how.
Sure. Well, first, Dave already mentioned that the Flying Santa flights were actually started by a pilot in Maine named Bill Winkapaw back in 1929.
Right.
And a few years after he started the tradition, he moved to Winthrop, Massachusetts, along with his family. His son, Bill Jr., was also a pilot and was involved in the flights. And Bill Winkapaw Jr., had Edward Rowe Snow as a teacher at Winthrop High School.
Mm-hmm.
Edward Rowe Snow lived in Winthrop most of his life. And that's how he first found out about the Flying Santa flights and got involved himself. In 1936, he flew for the first time along with the Winkapaws.
Now tell me, Jeremy, what was the original mission and what is the mission today? Now, we're talking about flying with presents, but it goes deeper than that, doesn't it?
Definitely, yeah. It was started by Bill Winkapaw as a way to show appreciation for the important work the lighthouse keepers were doing and their families, especially at some of the more isolated stations along the New England coast. It was a pretty thankless job and a very, very important job. And he really appreciated what they did because as a pilot, he often relied on the lighthouses to get him safely to his destination. He would actually see the lights from the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And so it started as a way to show appreciation to lighthouse keepers. And Edward Rowe Snow, I was just reading an article by Edward Rowe Snow where he said that because he made a living writing about the sea for so many years, he felt strongly, he wanted to show appreciation to keepers, but also as a way for him to give back something to the lighthouse keepers that he wrote about for so many years.
Well, both Dave and you are very much involved. Tell me about, Dave, the staff involved with Flying Santa. I mean, you need pilots, you need people to gather toys, you need people to find the destinations, right?
Yep. Currently, you know, the Friends of Flying Santa is a 501(c) nonprofit organization. And the whole thing, the whole program is we make 32 stops from Jonesport, Maine, down to Eaton's Neck, New York. And it couldn't be done without the wonderful people who volunteer their time and their services. And as Brian Tagg is president of the program, he lives in Stoneham, Mass. He's a young man whose whole heart and soul is into this program. And without his leadership, it wouldn't be where it is today and the people behind him. And as Brian says, it wouldn't have the same feeling if it wasn't for the helicopter pilots and Fisher Scientific, who donates one of the helicopters, and Evan Weil, who donates one, and he's one of our pilots. And for Fisher Scientific, it's Larry Todd and Art Gajikian, mm-hmm. two pilots who I flew with yesterday, who are just great guys. The characters, they get the kids laughing for the photos. And as Brian says, it wouldn't have the same effect if we were delivering these packages in a brown truck.
Yeah, it's something special. Of course, Edward Rowe Snow did it, and he was so... Well, tell me a little bit about him, Jeremy. He was sort of a character. I mean, he had the white hair and the twinkle in his eye.
Yeah.
But for people who don't remember, he passed away in the early 80s. He was doing this right up until the time of his death, or close to it, wasn't he?
That is correct, yeah.
Tell me about him in terms of his personage, if you don't
care. He was definitely a larger-than-life kind of personality. He was well known as a writer. He wrote about 40 full-length books and many booklets and newspaper columns and so forth. He also lectured to thousands and thousands of people during his career. I'm sure there are a lot of people listening who remember hearing him lecture and also hearing him on WBZ, because he appeared on BZ many times over the years.
That's right.
He used to be on with Larry Glick at night sometimes.
I remember those. Yeah,
yeah,
listening as you did too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, Edward Rowe Snow, a New England, it's like Julia Child in that respect, I think.
Yeah, sort a real of New England character.
Exactly. Now, both of you gentlemen are very much involved with this program and with the mm-hmm. coast in general, and I'd love to explore a little bit with both of you, and I'll start with Dave. Being in the Coast Guard, of course, for so many years, being a career Coast Guardsman, thank you for all the service you do and all your colleagues do. But you've been traveling these islands and moving up and down the coast for a long time. What's changed in the 25 years since I first met you on the harbor? What's different about the harbor today from your vantage point?
Well, I think today, 25 years later, since you and I were sailing around here with music and people dancing on the boats, which still goes on today, I think people today are much more educated and aware of the beauty of the Boston Harbor Islands. One major difference is today it's a national park. It wasn't a national park back then. More and more people, the access to the islands is much easier. More people go out there. They're getting involved with the islands. The harbor's cleaned up tremendously since the big MWRA cleanup. So we're seeing a lot of different, more people are using the harbor and using the islands much more than they were 20 years ago. And it's great. It's a great resource, and it's here in the people's backyards. It's close to the city of Boston, and it's a wonderful opportunity. We see many, many, many of the tourists out there just taking harbor tours and enjoying the beauty that's out there.
And Jeremy, as really a mainstay knowledge man when it comes to the lighthouses, we've often heard that these were a dying breed of people and structures. Is that still the case today, or are we finally waking up to the fact that these are national treasures? What's happening with lighthouses in New England?
Well, I think there's definitely a growing awareness of how important they are historically, and people love lighthouses. People really love lighthouses, and I think there's a lot of people out there who are dedicated to saving them and keeping them from falling over. A lot of them are still active ace in navigation. The Coast Guard still owns and maintains many of them. But as I think most people know, the Coast Guard is stretched pretty thin these days. They do a tremendous amount of very important things in their work, and they don't really have the funds anymore to care for lighthouses for historic preservation, that type of thing. So it's really falling more and more to the civilian world to save lighthouses. And there's a lot of people who care very much for them. Unfortunately, there's only so much money to go around these days, so it's a tough...
Right. But these are functioning units. These are important. Are they, Dave, to the coast and to those who sail along the coast?
Yes. There's still most of them today are still on active aid to navigation. And what's happened is the Coast Guard's gone in and formed a lot of partnerships with different organizations where they've taken over the maintenance of the structure and the grounds, and the Coast Guard maintains the optics to continue to send a signal to sea to mariners to help them navigate. Even though today we have this all the GPS and the high electronics out there, the radar, it's still something... I look at it as being a mariner myself, that when you're coming in there and you see that light, it's a sense of security. It gives you that that feeling of, yes, I do know where I am and I trust my electronics. And it's something that's been around forever and it'll be around for a long, long time.
Jeremy, did you want to jump in on that too, on the use and the utility of these structures, how important they are?
I definitely agree with what Dave said. I know that whenever I talk about lighthouses with especially small boaters, pleasure boaters, fishermen, people like that, if you say anything about the possibility, you know, if you suggest the idea that lighthouses aren't needed anymore, they'll jump all over you. They'll say they rely very much on lighthouses.
Well, I'd like to take a quick break before we do. I want to give the website out for Flying Santa because I understand you have a contest or some kind of an event coming up. Or
well, we just did an anniversary dinner. But the big thing we're doing is I spoke about a little bit. I'll get into a little more later. But you know, this whole thing is done through donations and fundraising.
Yeah.
And this year, come April, we're going to be doing a lighthouse tour in Bermuda. And all the information can be found on our website. It's a great way to take a trip to Bermuda and support the program. And the website for the Friends of Flying Santa is www.flyingsanta.org.
Okay, it's right there. And it's a great website, by the way. And there are wonderful links. And by the way, Jeremy's website, and I thought it was an error because I'm not familiar with this, but it's lighthouse.cc. Is that right?
That is correct, yeah.
I haven't seen the CC before. What does that mean, CC?
There's the funny version I usually tell, and the real reason, which is really boring. But what I usually tell people when they ask me what it stands for, I say, when you're at a lighthouse and you look around, what do you see? You CC.
Ah.
There you go.
All right, I'll buy that. But that's fine. You don't have to
You don't even want to hear the real
one. I don't want to hear the real one. We'll take a quick timeout. We'll come back and open up the lines if you have questions or comments for these two wonderful guys, Dave Waldrop with the Coast Guard and certainly volunteer with the Flying Santa organization, and Jeremy D'Entremont, who knows a heck of a lot about lighthouses. We'll be back with more when we return on WBZ.
Informed guests, entertaining topics, and intriguing questions. This is the Jordan Rich Show on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Hey, welcome back. It is a real joy to be with a good friend of mine, Dave Waldrop, who I've not seen in a long time, but we've communicated, and he and I used to sail the high seas together. I was a disc jockey on the cruise boats in the harbor, and Dave was Captain Dave, and we just had a ball. And now his more important role, of course, has been, as he's now Chief Warrant Officer in the U.S. Coast Guard, has been in the Coast Guard for many, many, many years. He's a full-time career officer. And Also, his own charter captain, RelentlessCharters.com. How many pounds of fish did you pick up yesterday?
We went out on Friday, and we did about 600 pounds of codfish and fish to 50 pounds. And they're only an hour and 20 minutes from the dock, which makes it really nice. And, you know, we do the private charters. We'll take up to six people. Or we'll just take one and take two more and bring them on. They don't know each other. By the end of the day, they leave as friends.
You can't stay away, can you?
I love the water.
Loves the water. And on the line with us is Jeremy D'Entremont, who is an expert and a historian. When it comes to lighthouses, he's the go-to guy, founder and president of the Friends of Portsmouth Harbor Lighthouse, a writer for Lighthouse Digest magazine. And visit the website, www.lighthouse.cc, and you'll find a lot of great stuff there. And Jeremy, we were talking during the break about old times, and I guess when it comes to lighthouses, everything's an old time. How old are some of the lighthouses in New England? Do they date back to the 1700s or 1800s? How far do they go?
Well, there are no more standing lighthouses that date back to the 1700s, but the first Boston Light in Boston Harbor was built in 1716,
wow.
And maybe it would still be standing, except that it was destroyed by the British in the Revolution, so that's why it's not there anymore. But the one that's there now goes back to... Actually, I I was wrong what I just said. The standing lighthouse now at Boston Light goes back to 1783, so that is the oldest in
Okay.
Hawaii.
And how many functioning lighthouses are there currently, let's say within the, from Maine to Rhode Island? Do we have a sense of how many we're dealing with?
About 150.
Really? That many?
It probably depends on your definition of a lighthouse and how you count them, but about 150.
And Dave, you're telling me you still rely on a lighthouse. It's a good warm feeling when you're cruising in either on a Coast Guard cutter or on your own boat, right?
It is. It's just it's nice to see that beam of light 10, 15 miles away, and you know, it just makes it easier to steer on a lighthouse than it is to look at a small compass or a set of numbers on a GPS.
And as mentioned, guys, the Flying Santa program was really designed to bring presents to those people in these, quote, outposts, right? Jeremy, these are people who don't get out much, and they have families. And is that still the case in the lighthouse world?
It's not. It's changed a lot. Things have changed a lot in the lighthouse world. All lighthouses are now automated, and there are really no more traditional-type keepers like there were in the old days. They're not really needed anymore, but there are still a lot of people living at the lighthouses for different reasons, as caretakers or Coast Guard families in some cases. Some of the lighthouses are actually at Coast Guard stations where there are a lot of people working there. But I should mention there's one official lighthouse keeper in the United States today, and that is at Boston Light, which, again, the oldest light station in America. And its role has changed a bit over the years. It's kind of an administrative position now, but still very important. And the I want to mention the keeper today at Boston Light is Sally Snowman, who is also the vice president of the Friends of Flying Santa.
Wait a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Is that her real name?
That's absolutely her real name.
Sally Snowman?
Yeah, that's how she pronounces it. Yeah.
Not Snowman. She calls it Snowman.
That's good.
I love it. How perfect is that?
It's good.
For the Flying Santa thing. Let's take a call here. Dave in Maine is on the line. It's great to hear from a Mainer. What do you say, Dave?
Well, good evening to all of you.
Evening.
Hey, I got two things for you. Now, Mr. Snow wrote several books, right?
He sure did.
Okay. He wrote one, and I commented when I first read about it, supposedly about knowing where pirate treasure was buried on the coast of Maine. Well, if he needed money for flying Santa Claus, why the H didn't he go dig it up himself?
Well, he did find a couple of treasures in his career. He spent a lot of time looking for treasures, and he found two. Not in Maine, though. Let's see, one in Nova Scotia and one in Chatham on Cape Cod.
Well, he claimed there was some buried up near Rockland on an island, but I don't know that.
I'm not sure about that one. I know Jewel Island in the Casco Bay, he said there may be treasure there. There are a few places.
Yeah. Well, I got another one. I regret not seeing all of them, but I did see a lot of those lighthouse series they had on the PBS there a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good. Well, there was one, I don't know where it was. His mother and a young daughter were visiting a lighthouse. The old keeper, he was long dead, I don't know how many years, and in the lobby of the tower was his portrait. And the woman and her daughter went up the top of the tower and looked around, and finally it's time to go down. The daughter wanted to stay up there. Well, she's down there talking with a guy's widow, and here's her daughter talking with somebody upstairs.
Yeah.
And there's nobody there.
I know the story.
Yeah. And when she comes down, who are you talking to? And the girl points the picture, she says, him.
A lot of great ghost stories surrounding lighthouses, Jeremy.
What happened?
There sure are. That was Presque Isle Light in Michigan. I know about that story. It's been featured in a few TV shows.
Oh, Michigan.
Story. They say there's a light there. There's no active light in that lighthouse for quite a few years, but people see a light at night where there is no light, basically.
Oh, boy.
No, stay in Maine. It's much better. Dave, thank you for the call, dear friend.
Okay, buddy.
Thank you. Bye-bye. It's really cool first of all, that accent of Dave's is, you can't, right? You guys hear that a lot when you're...
Heard a lot yesterday.
I bet you did. But it's really cool to think about, I suppose, the tradition involved here. And even though we've had technology and you say automated lighthouses and the Coast Guard's out there with GPS and all that, Dave Waldrop, as a captain on the ocean every single day, you still have to rely, I guess, on old-fashioned navigation and old-fashioned skill. You still have to be adept at seafaring, don't you, to make this thing work?
You do. You do. There's no doubt about it. I mean, when you're out there, you always have to fall back to traditional methods of navigation just in case satellites fail or your radar fails or what have you. You know, the old compass and a stopwatch is what people used to use years ago, and that's what we still go back to if things fail.
One of the things I wanted to ask you, Dave, since you are in the Coast Guard, and boy, do I have respect for anybody who's defending our homeland these days, but what role the Coast Guard has had, and we know it's a greater role, and how much strain it's put on you guys, and what you're doing now, without giving away any defensive trade secrets, to really make sure that things are safe out there. What are you doing these days?
Well, I've seen... Well, my current position is I work as the First Coast Guard District Small Boat Maintenance Manager. I oversee the, we got some great port engineers who work in our department, and they keep the fleet running, the small boats. And that's the boats that are less than 55 feet from Canadian border down in New Jersey, about 200 small boats. The ones you see escorting the LNG tankers in and ships and vessels of high interest. You know, and the more we're running these boats, the more casualties we have. So it's not just the people out riding the boats, doing the patrols. It's the people that are keeping them running. That's everybody's important and has an important role.
The fleet has to be upkept and kept up and updated and, you know, in good shape to keep the patrols up, right?
It does. Things have just changed so much. The op tempo's increased, and with the heightened security level we're at today, I don't think it's going to stop for quite some time. Fortunately, we're looking at new technology, new ships. At our 75th anniversary dinner, Rear Admiral Prokosky, the district commander for the Coast Guard here in Boston, for the First Coast Guard District, he's the commander. He spoke quite a bit about how new ships and technology are out there and the road we're headed down and what to expect here in the future.
We're talking here about the a variety of things, including the Flying Santa program, which is off and running. We're talking about lighthouses with Jeremy D'Entremont, an expert in that area. And we're also talking about the Coast Guard with Dave, if you'd like to check in with us at 617-254-1030. The Friends of the Flying Santa program, was there a lull when Edward Rose Snow died, Jeremy and Dave? What happened to the program at that point? I can't remember. And was there a time when it wasn't happening and you guys resurrected it? I know you've been doing it for several years, Dave.
Well, what happened, Jeremy's probably got better knowledge on this, but the Hull Lifesaving Museum stepped up to the plate. It looked like Mrs. Snow thought it was going to go away, and a gentleman by the name of Ed McCabe from the Hull Lifesaving Museum stepped up to the plate and kept it going until the Friends of Flying Santa stepped in and brought it up to where it is today.
Yeah, is that pretty much what you recall, Jeremy?
That is correct, yeah. Edward Snow had a stroke in 1981, actually. He died the following year, but so he was not able to fly in 1981. And a couple of people from the Hull Lifesaving Museum approached his wife, Anna Merle Snow, and she was very happy to accept their offer to do that year's flights. And Ed McCabe was actually the Santa for a few years there. And there's a good story about him if you want to hear that.
Sure,
he had a big black beard when he was flying Santa.
Yeah.
It's turned a little bit gray over the years, but in those days he had a big, bushy black beard. And they say that when the kids would ask, how come Santa's beard is black? The standard answer was, doesn't turn white until Christmas Eve.
Perfect. And by the way, the whole idea of Santa flying in by helicopter is not that outlandish. I mean, I remember being, I'm a landlubber, but I remember one year at the South Shore Plaza, where I will be next Friday for Children's Hospital, by the way, in Braintree, Santa flew in a helicopter, just landed right in the parking lot. And I thought that was the coolest thing, you know, and why not?
The kids love it.
Santa's got access to all the high-tech gear. Right?
He does.
Indeed. We'll take a short time out. We'll come right back and take more calls. And I'd like to ask both of you more about the lore and history and love of this coastline that we have, including I have a couple of questions for Jeremy about Cape Cod, the Chatham Light, I noticed in the book. And Dave, I've got some more questions about fishing off the coast. We'll be right back. This is WBZ, and we'll continue in moments.
Tonight, the Jordan Rich Show. Keep your radio set to 10:30 because every morning at 5, the WBZ Morning News, only on WBZ News Radio 1030.
It is delightful to be with you, as always, and We're here on the Jordan Ridge Show with two great guys. Dave Waldrop is a chief warrant officer in the U.S. Coast Guard. He's been in the Coast Guard since 1978. He loves it, and he also loves sailing, and he has his own charter company. You can go to relentlesscharters.com. And most importantly for tonight, he is one of the volunteers, ho, 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 with Friends of the Flying Santa program. Go to flyingsanta.org. I'm going to send you guys a little check, and I think a lot of folks out there can do that if they just go to the website.
Yes, they can go to flyingsanta.org and look at the history, and it's great, and they can become a member of the Friends, and when they do that, they can get our newsletter, either online or hard copy if they don't have a computer, and see what's coming up for events, for our tours, and things the program's been doing.
We'll get to another call or two in a moment, but Jeremy, during the break, my friend Dave asked me to ask you about a woman named Seemond Ponsart, and why this is such a great story.
That is one of the all-time great Flying Santa stories. Actually, Seemond is a friend of mine. She pronounces her name Seemond, to be exact.
Seemond, okay.
And she now lives in New Orleans, Louisiana, and is about 64 years old, I believe, at this point. But back when she was 5 years old, her father was a lighthouse keeper. And when she was 5 years old, they lived at Cuttyhunk Lighthouse in Massachusetts. I don't know if you know where Cuttyhunk Island is.
Oh, yes, yeah.
The Elizabeth Islands off of Falmouth, out in Buzzards Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a very isolated light station, of course. So the Flying Santa coming there in the mid-40s was a really big deal, especially for this five-year-old girl. And she was very much looking forward to it. But in 1945, when the Flying Santa plane flew over, and I don't think we've really talked about the fact that in the old days, the presents were actually dropped out of a plane. These days, I think Dave may have said a little bit about that, but these days it's done by helicopter. For many years, it was done by plane, and the presents were dropped out of the plane, very heavily padded presents, obviously.
Right.
So a present was dropped for Seemond at Cuttyhunk Island, and it was a doll, especially for her. But unfortunately, the package hit a sharp rock, and the doll was broken. And poor little Seemond was very upset by this. Her father tried to fix it the best he could, but they say she cried herself to sleep that night. And her parents wrote to Edward Rowe Snow and told him how happy they were with the Christmas presents, but they did mention that the doll was broken. So he thought that was unacceptable. And the following year, he rented a helicopter. Edward Rowe Snow was not a pilot, by the way. He always hired a plane and a pilot. But in 1946, he hired a helicopter and a pilot, and he flew to Martha's Vineyard. The Ponsart family, since the previous year, had moved to Martha's Vineyard. They were at West Choplite on Martha's Vineyard. And he landed there specifically to hand her a new doll so it wouldn't get broken. And it was just a great moment. We actually have film of that and photos of it, of him and Seemond with the doll. And, of course, she was just so thrilled. And she still talks about it as one of the great moments in her life. And just a little addendum to that, last year, Seemond flew along with the Flying Santa on the Massachusetts flight as basically an elf with Flying Santa.
Oh, wow. Isn't that great?
Yeah, and got to go to West Chop Lighthouse, where she spent a lot of her childhood.
That is terrific. We're talking again about the Flying Santa program, which is such a great history with Edward Rowe Snow. And the book, by the way, The Lighthouses of New England, I want to promote that as well, because you, Jeremy Dontremont, have updated this book in the Snow Centennial edition of it, and I really appreciate you bringing it to me tonight. I thank you for that. Let's do this. Let's take this phone call, and then you've got a great story, too, Dave, about Flying Santa on WBZ. It's 11:43. Why don't we take our break here so we can get rid of the business at hand, take care of the business at hand, not get rid of it, the sponsors, and then we'll come back and we'll conclude and continue with these two wonderful guys. And there's another great story that Dave's going to tell about Flying Santa, and we'll tell you more about the lighthouses and how you can get involved. This is WBZ. Be right back.
Guests, entertaining topics, and intriguing questions. This is the Jordan Rich Show on WBZ News Radio 1030.
Hello, dear friends. Welcome back. We have a little time left with our two great guests, Dave Waldrop and Jeremy Dontremont. Jeremy is the webmaster of New England Lighthouses, a virtual guide at www.lighthouse.cc. And I'll tell you, it's a great website. The pictures are just breathtaking. And pretty good historian. And with him, of course, with me in studio, Dave Waldrop, with the Coast Guard and with Flying Santa and the Flying Santa program, one of the Santas himself. and with his own company as a charter fisherman, relentlesscharters.com. Now, but guys, we have a few minutes left. Dave had a story about a moment in your career as the Santa.
Sure. One thing first, though, Jordan, is I got into this in 1993. I was officer in charge of AIDS Navigation Team Boston, taking care of lighthouses from Newburyport down to Plymouth, Mass., and I became good friends with Brian Tagg. He asked me if I was interested in being Santa that year. I said, sure. So I told my son about it, and he said, oh, Dad, you're going to make a good Santa. I said, what do you mean? And he put his hand on my belly. So anyways, we...
Nobody leaves you alone about that.
No. I did it from 93 to 96, and then I went to Alaska. I was transferred to Alaska, and at that point out there, I filled in as Santa out there, what they call Santa to the villages, going by ship to the village of Old Harbor on Kodiak Island. Well, Chief Warrant Officer Tom Guthline, who is now the CO of Commanding Officer Castle Hill, he filled in while I was gone, and then I resumed my duties when I got back. Well, today, George has since retired, and Brian's the president of the organization. Tom flew today. Tom's one of our second Santas. It's just too much for one of us, you know, to do all three flights, because it's a very exhausting thing. One of my most memorable stories, though, is a few years back, we landed in Scituate Harbor at Scituate Light, right out there on the point, Cedar Point, beautiful lighthouse. And this little boy came over to me. His name was Steven. And being Santa, you always get a couple of perks. You get the picture with the bride and different things like that. Well, my family was friends of Steven's family, and Steven came over. And he's all excited, jumping up and down. And he didn't know they were just going exploring on the beach. He didn't even know Santa was coming in. So he gets all excited, and he's jumping up and down, and we land, and I go right over to him. I say, how you doing, Steven? Well, his eyes lit up when Santa knew his name. So he wanted me to have the seashell. Seashell was very distinctive, had very nice markings on it. And I said, well, Steven, you keep that seashell. No, Santa, I want you to have it. So I didn't want to disappoint him. I took the shell, and I was in the helicopter, and the shell was fairly large, and I'm holding it out the window when I'm waving to him, and he saw me take off with Evan Weil there. We flew off, and I had the shell in my hand, and off Santa goes off to the next lighthouse. Well, of course, I asked him to leave out the cookies and milk for Santa and something for Rudolph. And come Christmas morning, when he checked on that, right there on the table next to the cookie was the same exact shell.
Gee, I wonder how that happened.
I don't know, but we say Stephen is now a believer.
That's a great thing. Playing Santa Claus, there's nothing like it. I play Santa Claus, strange as it may seem, and there's nothing like it. It's the greatest feeling in the world. Jeremy, back to lighthouses for a sec. I got two questions for you. One is Chatham. I've been to Chatham several times. Am I mistaken, or wasn't there a double lighthouse in Chatham?
There was at one time, yeah. The present lighthouse had a twin at one time.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
That's actually now, the twin still exists, but it's now Nauset Light in East Ham.
So they move these things occasionally, don't they?
Occasionally they do, yeah.
Yeah. The other question is, I noticed on the website, lighthouses.cc, that there are accommodations at many of these lighthouses throughout the country. You can stay at a lighthouse as a getaway vacation type deal?
That's right. Yeah, it's very, very popular. In fact, the most popular one in New England is Rose Island Lighthouse in Newport Harbor, Rhode Island. And I think the latest is that they're booked about 3, maybe 4 years in advance at this point. It's that popular.
Wow. And what you stay literally in the lighthouse proper?
You do. That's a combined dwelling and lighthouse. You stay inside the lighthouse. And people stay there for a week and basically serve as keeper for a week. They pay for the privilege, but they absolutely love it.
Oh, I would love to do that. That sounds like great fun. The other question is, and we'll get back to the Flying Santa before we conclude, there is a company called Lighthouse Depot, right? They are sponsors here on BZ. They've been advertising for years.
That's right.
So a little plug to them. Thank you. And tell me a little bit about the kinds of things that people buy related to lighthouses.
Everything.
Absolutely everything, from collectible models to toilet seats.
Toilet seats.
And beyond.
Okay.
Yeah.
Toilet seats with important lights in them? Is that what happened?
Something like that.
We don't need to go there. So literally, it's for people listening, it is a collector's hobby. A lot of people do that.
Oh, very much. It's kind of like a subculture, I think. It's amazing how deeply people are into collecting lighthouse-related things.
Well, that is really cool. And the future, then, is still strong for lighthouses. They are automated, but they're still vital and functioning and important.
Well, they're links to our past, too. They're very important historic structures. They were a big part of what made this country what it is.
As are the Harbor Islands. And, Dave, you take people on tours all the time. What's your favorite island to talk about when you're out there? You have a favorite?
I like them all, but I'd have to say George's Island just because of the Civil War history out there and the large fort and the accessibility. People can get up there and walk around and get a nice tour by the park rangers.
If they've never been there, it's incredible, especially during the warmer months. It's really neat. There's a new book, not a new book, Dennis Lehane wrote a book, Shutter's Island, I think it's called, which fiction, last year, and it's due to be a movie, and it takes place on a fictional island, but oh, is it scary. And it talks about a sanitarium that they, an old sanitarium on one of the islands, which they, of course, they've had those.
Right.
So, if you get a chance to read that, it's really cool. And, what's that lady, Lady in Black, is that the one?
Lady in Black.
Where's that?
Gross Nose's most famous story, probably.
Yeah, Jeremy or Dave comment on that, because I remember that distinctly, probably on the Larry Glick Show.
Yeah, oh, I'm sure. He told it many times on the radio. In fact, I have a recording or two of that. The Lady in Black is a famous ghost of George's Island, and goes back to the Civil War days. I don't know if you want to hear the story.
I would.
Take a couple minutes. I'll try to tell the Reader's Digest version of it.
Sure, go ahead, yeah.
Basically, Edward, of course, nobody could tell it like Edward Rowe Snow. He was such a great storyteller. He had a wonderful voice and a great dramatic way of telling a story. But basically, the story was that I should mention that when he first wrote this, he said he couldn't guarantee that any part of it was true, but people loved hearing it, and he loved telling it. The story is that in the Civil War, there was a Confederate officer who was held prisoner at George's Island in Fort Warren, which was used as a Confederate prison during the war. And this man's wife down in Georgia found out where he was and journeyed north, found some Confederate sympathizers in Hull. They got her a Union Army uniform, and they rowed her ashore in the middle of the night. And the story is that she was able to sneak into the dungeon where he was being held prisoner by squeezing through a tiny opening because she was very small, and she found her husband. But, of course, then they were both in prison, so they had to figure out a way to get out. So they dug their way out into the parade ground of the fort with some of the other prisoners. But in coming out of the parade ground, they hit a rock with a shovel. The sentry heard the noise, and there was gunfire. She had a gun with her that she was given by the sympathizers, and she fired the gun, but it misfired and killed her own husband. So she was immediately apprehended and sentenced to be hanged as a spy, and she was swung out into eternity, as Edward Rowe Snow used to say. But before she died, her last request was that she be given a lady's garment to wear. So they gave her a black robe that happened to be there, and that's what she wore when she died. And according to Edward Rowe Snow, and according to some other people, too, there's a lot of interesting stories about George's Island. The ghost of the Lady in Black has been seen many, many times over
the years. Hey, Captain Dave, you ever seen the Lady in Black?
Not yet.
Not still looking, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, first of all, Jeremy, I want to thank you very, very much for spending an hour with us. Fascinating stuff. Lighthouses are a part of New England history and a part of American history, and they should be certainly kept. The memories should be kept, and the lighthouses should be kept up to date. And I thank you for this. The book is The Lighthouses of New England by Edward Rowe Snow and updated by Jeremy Don Tremont. And the website, again, is lighthouses.cc, correct?
That's correct. Either lighthouse.cc or lighthouses, plural.
Oh, okay.
CC. Either one will get you there.
Terrific. And I thank you very, very much. And Dave is very kind to bring you on board. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thanks very much.
Good night. Thank you. Now, Dave, in the final few moments here, just you and me, let's review again the Flying Santa program. It runs from now until when?
Well, we'll conclude our flights for this year. Next weekend's our last flight, and that's the Massachusetts area will be our last flight for this year. And, and then we start probably a couple weeks later preparing for next year already.
Because you need the money for donations and the toys.
The money for donations. The gifts are very small. You know, it's the gifts are really just something the kids like. It's not an expensive thing. It's not for needy kids. It's to keep the New England tradition alive.
Right.
And that's what it's really about. It's a New England tradition, and it's something unique. It involves historical lighthouses, and we just want to keep it going.
It's nice to know that this fella who did it most of his adult life, Edward Rowe Snow, left a legacy that you guys have carried on. And there is something special about people on the high seas, particularly the harbor people I met. I met Dave 25 years ago, and well, not more. And I don't know anything about the sea except that I love it. And but being under his tutelage as a captain, I can't tell you how much fun it was to be out there with you. And I always felt comfortable and safe.
You weren't scared?
Never. In fact, one time, I don't know if you were with us or not, if you were captaining that day, we went out about 6 or 7 miles out to say goodbye to the tall ships. It was a cruise boat, and people paid a lot of money to be on that boat, and they were eating and dining and all that. And quite frankly, everyone got sick except for me and you and a few others. I love it. Give it to me, baby. Give it to me more.
It's fun.
Who needs Dramamine? It's great fun. FlyingSanta.org is how people can find out more. Also, RelentlessCharters.com, which is your website. And good luck, Santa.
Thank you very much.
Great to have you. That's going to do it. We are out of time. I will see you all, hopefully, many of you, on Friday, December 10th at the South Shore Plaza in Braintree for Children's Hospital. Send in your checks to me here at WBZ for copies of the book for the children. And God bless you all, and have a wonderful, wonderful week as we sail off into the sunset. Steve Lavelli next. Jordan saying good night, good morning, God bless you, and God bless America.